Indifferent as my head was, I had a little time to consider the man and his behavior. He terrified me with his looks and with his violent emotions as he gazed upon me. Evident joy-suppressed emotions, as I have since recollected. His sentence was short and pronounced, as if his breath were touched. Never saw I his abominable eyes look as then they looked, triumphed in them, fierce and wild, and more disagreeable than the woman's at the vile house appeared to me when I first saw them, and at times such a leering, mischief-boding cast. I would have given the world to have been 100 miles from him, yet his behavior was a decency, however, that I might have seen to be struggled for he snatched my hand 2 or 3 times, with a vehemence in his grasp that hurt me, speaking words of tenderness through his shut teeth, as it seemed, and let it go with a beggar-voiced, humble accent, yet his words and manner carrying the appearance of strong and almost convulsed passion. Oh, my dear, what mischiefs was he not then meditating? I complained once or twice of thirst. I called for water. Some table beer was brought me. Beer, I suppose, was a better vehicle, if I were not dosed enough already, for their potions. I told the maid that she knew I seldom tasted malt liquor. Yet, suspecting nothing of this nature, being extremely thirsty, I drank it and instantly, as it were, found myself much worse than before, as if inebriated, I should fancy. I know not how. His servant was gone twice as long as he needed, and just before his return came one of the pretended Lady Bettys, with a letter for Mr. Lovelace. He sent it up to me. I read it, and then it was that I thought myself a lost creature. It being to put off her going to Hampstead that night, on account of violent fits, which Miss Montague was pretended to be seized with, for then immediately came into my head his vile attempt upon me in this house. I then insisted upon going directly to Lady Betty's lodgings. Mrs. Lessons was now a crowded house, he said, and as my earnestness could be owing to nothing but groundless apprehension, and oh, what vows, what protestations of his honor did he make, he hoped I would not add to their present concern. Charlotte, indeed, was used to fits, he said, upon any great surprises, whether of joy or grief, and they would hold her for a week together, if not got off in a few hours. You are an observer of eyes, my dear, said the villain, perhaps in secret insult, saw not in Miss Montague's now and then, at Hampstead, something wildish. I was afraid for her then. Silence and quiet only do her good. Your concern for her and her love for you will but augment the poor girl's disorder, if you should go. All impatient with grief and apprehension, I still declared myself resolved not to stay in that house till morning. All I had in the world, my rings, my watch, my little money for a coach, or, if one were not to be got, I would go on foot to Hampstead that night, though I walked it by myself. A coach hereupon sent for, or pretended to be sent for. Any price, he said, he would give to oblige me, late as it was, and he would attend me with all his soul, but no coach was to be got. Let me cut short the rest. I grew worse and worse in my head, now stupid, now raving, now senseless. The vilest of vile women was brought to frighten me. Never was there so horrible a creature as she appeared to me at that time. I remember I pleaded for mercy. I remember that I said I would be his indeed. I would be his to obtain his mercy. But no mercy found I. My strength, my intellects failed me, and then such scenes followed. Oh, my dear, such dreadful scenes. fits upon fits, faintly indeed and imperfectly remembered, procuring me no compassion, but death was withheld from me. That would have been too great a mercy. Thus I was tricked and deluded back to blacker hearts of my own sex than I thought there were in the world, who appeared to me to be persons of honor, and when in his power, thus barbarously was I treated by this villainous man.